Welcome back to the South Harbor Church Podcast. South Harbor Church is a part of the Harbor Churches, which exist to help people find their way back to God. This week, Pastor Tim wraps up our series called Healthy with a message on slowing down. As always, stick around after the message for more information about how you can become a part of the South Harbor Church community. And now, here's Pastor Tim.
And if you have a Bible, we're going to be in Mark chapter 1. Mark writes one of four biographies on the life of Jesus. Mark chapter 1. How y'all doing? Good. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Tim. We're glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. This morning, we are wrapping up a series. We've been calling this series Healthy, and we've been in it the entire month of January. And just even doing the work on this one, I realized, like, man, it feels like we're wrapping this up too soon. Like, I think we should keep going. At some level, now I know where we're going after this, and I think that's a really urgent conversation too. But part of me is like, man, I wish we could keep going on this. For me, this series in particular, I've done a lot of work of prep personally for this particular series. I hope it's been helpful to you all. Our goal in the series was to get really, really practical. We wanted to ask the question, okay, if you have the words of Jesus and the ways that Jesus lived, what would that look like in our world? If you were to take the things Jesus said and the ways Jesus lived and you were to bring them into your world with your technology and your temptations and your schedule demands and all of that, what would it look like? How do we actually do it? And so we've been like some really basic practices. We talked about week one, we talked about simplicity and what does it look like to live a simplistic life. You see this in the life of Jesus, but what does it look like for us to do that? And by the way, one of the things I love about this series is, so it was last week, somebody came up to me and said, you know what we did this past weekend? My family and I went through our closets and we gave away 6 bags of clothes because we just didn't need these clothes and we figured somebody else did. You all take this seriously, so it means a ton. We talk about simplicity. We've talked about Sabbath. For me, Sabbath is the practice of all the practices. It's the practice that's changed my life more than any other. We talked about Sabbath and kind of how to practice Sabbath. One of the things we wrestled with is one of the things you find in Jesus is Jesus will give you the value, and here's what we should do. But what he also recognizes is that you can't oversimplify some of this stuff. It's not necessarily always black and white. Like, here's what to do on Sabbath, and here's what not to do. And so we kind of wrestled with how do you, for instance, work. We're told on the Sabbath, do no work. But work is never defined. And so we have to do that. Like, what is work? We talked about that. Last week, we looked at silence. And what does it look like to be people who actually take a beat and listen? And then this morning, if Sabbath is the one that for me has been the most life-changing, the one we're going to talk about this morning has been the most difficult. I want to spend a few minutes this morning talking about slowing down. So hopefully you're keeping a list of the practices, like after the series, this stuff can go on. But today, slowing down. So this one's a little different than normal. A normal sermon for me. Normally we'll do like the teaching and here's the value. So like here's Sabbath, here's what it looks like. And then we'll end with here's how to practice it. Or here's a couple suggestions. I want to flip that this morning. I want to start with the two challenges I gave myself on the front end of. So back in November, I said, hey, I am going to try my hardest to give myself specific rules that I can say, okay, how did this feel? How did this go? Two challenges I gave myself in November around this idea of slowing down. The first challenge was at the beginning of the hour, I would take 1 minute and I would just pause. So tried to reflect on, okay, who was I with? What did they say? What did I not hear? What do I have to circle back on? So one, like every hour, the first minute of every hour, I just paused and took a beat. And I use an app called Evernote. And so I would just like write down like, who was I with? What did they say? Did I miss something that I got to circle back on? Now, obviously, this doesn't always work. Like, by the way, if you're in the middle of a conversation, don't stop, right? If it's like hang on, I got to be really spiritual for a second. I've been taking notes on our conversation. Now, that's weird. Don't do that. But I tried, whenever it worked, whenever, like, after a conversation would wrap up, I would do my best to, like, just take a minute and take some notes. And then at the end of the day, I would take 5-10 minutes. So this is beginning of November. Took 5 or 10 minutes just to reflect on the day. What is it that God, of all the things that the ways God tries to speak, what did I catch today? What should I catch today? And I would just take a moment and I'd write it down. And I kept a list, just kept a list in Evernote of all of those things. That was the first challenge I gave myself, just to kind of pump the brakes on my life, slow down a little bit. The second challenge was to read one story every day in the life of Jesus. One story every single day in the life of Jesus, but to read it slowly and to pay attention to specifically, how did Jesus show up with people? What did Jesus say to people? And then here's a question that for me, like, this opened up a lot, was what would be my gut instinct in the same situation? What would I have done in the story? Like, if you were to, like, put me in the story and this blind guy's begging and he's saying, hey, help me, help me. How would I have responded in that moment? I did that once a day, take a story of Jesus. So the challenge I gave myself was once an hour, a minute every hour and 5 minutes at the end of the day, just to pay attention. And then one story of Jesus. That was the research I did for this particular sermon. Honestly, it's less research than normally goes into a sermon. And what I discovered on the back end was all sorts of things that I didn't realize were there. So those are the challenges. What I want to do with the time we have this morning is I want to just give you, now typically in a sermon, what I'm trying to do is organize thoughts in a way that makes coherent sense. Like, you're trying to take a bunch of ideas and study and research, and you're trying to package it in some kind of a linear fashion that when you walk out of here, hopefully, if I do my job, a complex idea becomes a bit, like, a little bit more understandable or simplistic, or we can do it a little bit better. What I want to do this morning is I want to give you the ideas or the thoughts that came to me kind of as they came to me. Now, I've moved a couple of them around for flow, but for the most part, I just want to give you, I had a running list. It was over 300 things long. I'm not going to give you 300 things, but I do want to give you what I will consider the alternative title for this series, or this sermon, was 23 things that I thought were disconnected that may actually be connected. So I just want to give you a random list of 23 things that I discovered out of 300. I pulled 23 of my favorites, and I want to give you those things. And there was a moment for me. I remember where I was. I remember the coffee I was drinking. I remember exactly what I was looking at. There was a moment for me where all of the thoughts around slowing down, all of a sudden, they made sense to me. So I want to tell you that moment, but first, 23, or depending on time, 27, 13. I don't know. We'll see how much time we have. So if you're taking notes, just number it. Here we go. Number one, thought number one. In the late 1990s, two of my favorite authors and pastors had a conversation. One of them is a guy by the name of John Ortberg. Have you heard of John Ortberg? Brilliant man, John Ortberg. John calls a guy by the name of Dallas Willard. Dallas Willard, by the way, the top book there, The Divine Conspiracy, one of the best books I've ever read. Just unbelievable book. John Ortberg calls Dallas Willard because he's got an issue. He's got a problem. His problem is, he is the pastor of this mega church. I won't name the church, but it's probably the most influential church of that time, at least the biggest church, the most influential church in America at that time. He's one of the pastors at this church. He has built the giant church. He has sold the books. People show up to the church just to see him, and he calls Dallas Willard because he's got a problem. He's climbed the ladder. He's gotten to the top of this so-called ladder, and now he's wondering, okay, now what? I've achieved all the things. I was told that's what, like, success looks like. Now what? Now what? Like, now what do I do? Dallas Willard famously was known for taking long pauses anytime he was asked a question. So he paused. And then Dallas Willard, over the other end of the phone, said this. He said, "You now must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." To which John Ortberg says, "Okay, what else?" He pauses again and he says, "There is nothing else. Hurry is the great enemy of spiritual life in our day. You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life. The secret sauce, according to Dallas Willard, who, I'm just telling you, this man is brilliant, or was brilliant. Dallas Willard says the secret sauce of the spiritual life is to slow down. Thought number two. A couple of weeks ago, I watched The Sandlot with my six-year-old son, Abram. It's kind of a rite of passage, I feel. The Sandlot, in my opinion, two thoughts on The Sandlot. Thought number one, it is one of the best movies of all time. You can disagree with it, you'll be wrong. But you can disagree. Sandlot has more quotable phrases in The Sandlot than any other movie, I think, ever. That's thought number one. Thought number two, there are things we used to say in the 90s that we shouldn't say anymore. Not because we are overly sensitive or being too politically correct, but because we need less mean people in our world. And there are things that certain movies or phrases in the 90s that were said that aren't exactly kind. One of those phrases that I picked up on from Sandlot is it used to be in style or in vogue, and I think it may be still, to refer to certain people as slow people. So-and-so, you know, oh yeah, they're a little slow on the uptake, or they're just a little bit slow. Excuse them, he's a little slow. You heard this phrase used this way. Slow in our world tends to be considered an insult. It tends to be slow. So if Dallas Willard says, you know what the secret sauce is, slow down. We live in a world that it says, actually, no, slow is what we don't want. In fact, if you look it up in Webster's dictionary, the word slow, Webster, by the way, kids, there used to be a guy named Webster and he would collect words. That's how we learn things. But slow in Webster's dictionary is mentally dull, stupid, naturally inert or sluggish, lacking in readiness, promptness, or willingness. We live in a world where the message is very loud and clear. Slow is bad. Thought number three. First story I read about Jesus in preparation for this series, November 1st, was Mark chapter 1. Mark, if you have your Bible, look at Mark chapter 1. Mark's biography on the life of Jesus is really interesting. In fact, the first chapter of Mark kind of sets the pace for the majority of Mark. What you discover in Mark's gospel is that Jesus has a lot to do. Jesus is go, 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 go. At the beginning of Mark's gospel, first story. So Mark like skips the whole Jesus was born in a manger, silent night, holy night. He skips a whole birth narrative and he picks up at the baptism of Jesus. That's how he launches his biography. And there's this word that comes up again and again in Mark. It's the word immediately. And then Jesus, so immediately he was baptized. And then immediately he goes off to the desert where for 40 days and 40 nights he is tempted. And then immediately coming out of the desert, he collects 12 disciples, apprentices, and invites them to follow him. And then immediately following this, crowds of people are gathering around him because he's healing people. It's Mark chapter 1, that's just the first half, is action-packed. And then we come to this story. In fact, look at verse 32 of Mark 1. It says, that evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and the demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. So Mark 1, first half of Mark 1, Jesus is a flurry of activity. Activity after activity after activity. And these people, the whole town comes to, these are not nameless, faceless people. These people matter to Jesus. In fact, the story right before this is Jesus goes to the house of the first disciple he calls, a guy named Peter, Simon at this point, but gets later renamed Peter. And Peter's mother-in-law is sick. And if you know anything about the life of Peter, Peter at this point, he's not, like taxation is really high, and so Peter works all night. Often he's fishing all night long. Some of you know what it's like to work all day and then have to still work all night. That's Peter. And then he comes home and his mother-in-law. So he comes home, I imagine, to a distraught wife. His wife's not actually mentioned, but so maybe she passed away. We don't know. But all we know is Peter works hard all day, and then he comes home and his mother-in-law is ill. Jesus goes to her home. This is not a nameless, faceless person. This is a person Jesus cares deeply about. Now, this particular village, the whole village gathered at his door. We're told earlier in the story that this village is Capernaum. This is Jesus' hometown. These are his people. These are his friends. These are his neighbors. These are the people that are coming to Jesus' door. And then we read this. This is what makes the story odd. Verse 35, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Jesus sneaks out, middle of the night, when no one's watching, they're at his door, but he finds a way out. He heads off to a solitary place. This is what is known as a Ramos Tapas. This is where we believe Jesus would have given the Sermon on the Mount. Solitary place. Jesus sneaks off to a solitary place and he spends the night in prayer. Jesus pumps the brakes and he prays. And he comes back and he says this, verse 36. Simon, that's Peter, and his companions went to look for Jesus. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else to the nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come." So Jesus has been going. His whole hometown is still gathered. There's still sick people in his hometown. And at some point, Jesus, he sneaks off, he prays, and then he comes back. And at some point, Jesus has to turn his back on really good people, really urgent tasks. Question is, what does he pray about? We're not told in the story what Jesus prays about. What we are told is that when Jesus is done praying, when he's done speaking with his Father, he has a crystal clear understanding of his mission. There is the urgent, and it's important stuff. There is the urgent. It's people who are hurting. He knows these people. But then there is the very, very important, the stuff only Jesus can do. Raise up a group of disciples to carry on his message, show people how to live, die, defeat Satan, sin and death, you know, those kinds of things. Jesus has important work to do. There is a tyranny of the urgent, but Jesus has important work to do. What does Jesus pray about? We're not told specifically. I imagine at some point Jesus has to hear from the Father, "You can trust these people to me. You have important work to do. This community that you love, you can trust them to me." I wrote down in my Evernote journal, maybe I need to slow down so that I can figure out what I can let go of and trust to God and what is the important work that is mine alone to carry. Let me read that again. I wrote, maybe I need to slow down. This was November 1st. Maybe I need to slow down so that I can figure out what I can let go of and trust to God and what is the important work that is mine alone to carry. Number four, President Eisenhower once said, "I have two kinds of problems, the urgent and the important. The urgent are not important, and the important are never urgent." I have two kinds of problems, the urgent and the important. The urgent are not important, and the important are never urgent. This has come to be known as the Eisenhower method, separating the urgent and the important. Thought number five. Keeping up. Here's a screenshot of my phone I took the other day. There was apparently snow. I don't know what the weather alert was. I have 23 reminders. Now, this was on a Saturday. I literally took this yesterday because I was like, I'll keep it as fresh as possible. This is yesterday, so it's the weekend. Give me a little break. But I got to update my phone, apparently. That's the settings thing. I have 45 unread messages, and I'm doing pretty okay at email, but 45 unread messages and 237 unread text messages. That last one drives my wife bonkers. She cannot understand how I can have 237 unread text messages. I cleared it out at the beginning of the year, too. I was like, I'm just going to mark all red. But I told her, I can't understand how you can keep up on all the text messages. I just can't. I'd have to be on it all day. Thought number six. In the 6th century, St. Benedict wanted to make sure that prayer was practiced very regularly by Christians. So he organized his church, his monastery, into 7 periods of prayer every single day. He would divide things up so that there would be 7 periods of prayer every single day. Now this created an issue. What if you missed one? What if we prayed all day long? We're in prayer season number 6 and the sun is set and now we have to go to bed so we can get up and do it all over again. What if we missed one? That was the problem. It took 600 years or so, but the monks who wanted to slow down so they could pray more in the 600 years figured out how we can solve the problem. The answer was the first mechanical clock. They invented the clock. Monks invented the clock. The next time your kids, the next time your parents are like, "Get off your phone," just be like, "It's not my fault. The monks gave it to me." Thought number 7. two or three summers ago, I was, my family and I were invited to Ryan and Kelly Thornton's house. Are they? They usually sit over here. They maybe use a second. Okay. That we were invited over there. If you know Ryan and Kelly, they're, I'm talking about them and I didn't tell them I was going to talk about them, but that's okay. That's okay. They're two of the greatest people I know. They honestly just have hearts of gold, and they invited us over to their house for lunch. And so we went, and at some point, a neighbor of theirs came over, and this, which by the way is not surprising, they know everyone and everyone loves them. And so this neighbor came over and we began talking, and I found the conversation fascinating. This neighbor of theirs was, we were talking about technology, and at one point he said, you know, here's the thing with technology. If the product is free, you do realize you are the product. And I was like, oh no, tell me more. I want to know all about this. He's like, yeah, if the product is free, you are the product. Like, so if Facebook's free or if Google is giving you a free email, you're the product. They're selling you in that. And I'm like, say more. He goes, yeah, absolutely. He goes, you know what they really want, don't you? I remember this so clearly. He goes, you know what they really want, don't you? They want your attention. Your attention is worth more to them. Your attention is worth more to them than your money. You know what they really want is they want your attention. Thought number eight. My kids love to swim. Whenever possible, we go to the lake or the pool and we take our kids swimming. I don't know where it came from, but they all love to swim. But I've observed something in my kids. When we take them out swimming, they will, especially my boy, he'll say, Dad, watch this. And then he'll show me whatever trick he's doing. You know what he really wants, don't you? More than anything, he wants my attention. My attention is worth more to him than my money. How we doing? Thought number nine. That one makes me cry. Thought number nine. I went to go see Mr. Rogers, the movie, The Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Have you seen this movie? Terry recommended it. A couple of you recommended it. I went to go see the movie. I don't go to see a lot of adult movies in the theater. Adult movies, that's a weird thing to say. So, movies that aren't targeted to toddlers, let's put it that way. On my birthday, a few times a year, maybe we go out and see a movie. And on my birthday, Liza's like, what movie do you want to go see? And I was like, I've heard great things. Now, typically, by the way, when I have the opportunity to go to a movie, I'd like to go to a high action movie that is way better in the theater than at home. Like a lot of movies you can see at home and it's the same experience, but there's certain movies and there's a few of them out right now. Jumanji is like an action movie. Bad Boys has a new movie. I remember those from when I was a kid. Star Wars is I had enough of you, a couple of you especially, like had said, hey, you gotta go check out this Mr. Rogers movie. It's amazing. So I went to the Mr. Rogers movie. A few minutes into the Mr. Rogers movie, I remember thinking to myself, this movie is kind of boring. Took a few minutes. About 10 minutes into the movie, something magical happened in the Mr. Rogers movie. Who's seen this movie? Okay, Tom Hanks is brilliant in the movie. About 10 minutes in, what some people have come to refer to as Fred Rogers time takes over. Because early on, it's really slow. It's just like the show. He comes in and he's taking off his work clothes and putting on his cardigan and changing his shoes. But about 10 minutes in, your whole temperament slows down. You get kind of absorbed in Fred time, which I think is necessary because most of us, at least I'll speak for myself, I tend to live my life at a pace where I don't actually have to deal with emotions. I just keep moving. I got another thing to do. I got another email or text. I got to answer that text message. That's really important. I got to do that. And so I can run at such a pace that I don't have to deal with certain emotions. But once you enter Fred time, you kind of have to deal with them. There was a moment in the movie where I found myself just... one of the things I noticed in the movie was even the way I talk, I speak at least twice as fast as Mr. Rogers. Thought number 10. When I was a kid, I was really shy in school. Most of my childhood, I was really shy. But there was every once in a while I'd have a teacher that would unlock me. I remember the first teacher that would unlock me. She was just an amazing person. Her name was Mrs. Ward, and she unlocked me. The power of a great teacher is they can take a kid who doesn't believe in himself at all, a shy kid, a kid who thinks he doesn't belong, and they can unlock you, and they can make you think you can do anything. And Mrs. Ward did that. There's a problem when she unlocked me. She unlocked me. I went from a shy kid, and all of a sudden, it's like I was saving words. Because once she unlocked me, I couldn't stop talking. And for that entire year, like, she was safe, and so I was talking, and I remember very, very distinctly, and this loving, totally amazing woman pulled me out, like, before recess and said, "Hey, Tim, can I talk to you?" And she said this in a way that it wasn't mean, although it's gonna sound mean. But she goes, "Here's what I've observed about you. Sometimes, what I think is the problem, sometimes, is that you have diarrhea of the mouth and constipation of the brain." Thought number 11. How are we doing on time? Okay. Thought number 11. A couple weeks ago, my wife came home. I was doing dishes, and I had a podcast playing in the background. And she hung up her coat, and then she walks into the kitchen, and she says to me, "I can't." And I'm like, what? She goes, "You got to turn it off. I just can't." To which I responded, "What are you talking about? This is like, you've given it a shot. This podcast is really interesting. It was an interview." And I'm like, "You just got to give this interview a chance. It's really, really interesting." And she goes, "No, I can't. I just can't." So I shut it off. But my whole time I'm like, what do you mean you can't? So that night, we've got this little ritual at night where we talk and we pray. And so I was talking to her and I was like, "Hey, question for you. Why couldn't you?" Like, I just explained to me why you couldn't on the podcast. Like, what was preventing you from, like, listening to the podcast? And she said, "Oh, it wasn't the content that was the issue. I don't know how you can listen to podcasts that fast." I discovered back in the day that you can turn your podcast to 1.5 speed, but I also then discovered you can actually turn them up to 2.0 speed. And so I was listening to an interview in 2.0 speed. I didn't even realize it. My brain had just kind of adjusted because I was just trying to absorb the information, and I just kind of adjusted to it at 2.0 speed. She comes home and says, "I can't." Number 12. Like I said, these are random. Maybe. Number 12. I learned recently that Netflix users were given the opportunity to, some were given the opportunity to beta test watching TV shows and movies at 1.5 speed. Have you heard of this? It's quite controversial. That information was, I read about it from a UK online magazine called The Independent. That happened on, that beta test came out on October 29th, 2019. Now, that date also happens to be my wedding anniversary. Thought number 13. Eliza and I's wedding anniversary, our wedding 8 years ago, we had several passages of scripture that we read. One of those passages of scripture was 1 Corinthians 13, often dubbed as the love passage, which is fitting because I love this passage. 1 Corinthians 13 is from the words of Paul, one of the first church planters. Paul begins the love chapter like this. Let me just read you how he starts it. He says, "If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing." That's how he starts. That's how he kicks it off. But then he moves into a description of, here's what love is. This is how he begins that description. Love is patient. This was a major aha for me when I was prepping for this sermon back in mid-November. The first definition of love is patient. The first definition of love is patient. Number 14. When I was in college, I drove a 1991 Dodge Intrepid. That's not, okay, I don't know anything about cars. I just pulled a picture of a car. Somebody told me that's not a Dodge Intrepid.
Fair enough. I also didn't put up a cone, okay? But my car, the problem with my Dodge Intrepid was, I love this car because I was in college, and the first 2 years of college, I did not have a car. And so when I got the car, I thought, oh, this is freedom. Now I can, like, go places. I had nowhere to go. I had no money, but I could, which was great. The problem with the car is every once in a while, it would just stop running. Now, I don't know anything about cars, but I do know that when a car just stops running, it's not a good thing. There's one time where it stopped on... Hey, if you know Holland, I went to Hope, so I was in Holland, on River and Douglas, right in the middle of the intersection, which I didn't know what to do, so I just got out and left. I was like, what do you do? I called somebody, but I'm like, I don't know what do you do when your car stops? I don't know. One time, it was 11 o'clock at night, I was getting groceries at the Meijer, which is 16th Street there, and my car just stops. And I didn't know what to do. It was 11 o'clock at night. Like, who do you call at 11 o'clock at night? So I called my dad. And I was like, Dad, and it's 11 o'clock at night. He was in bed by then. And so I called him and said, Dad, my car broke down. Here's where I am. If you know Holland, Holland's a pretty safe community. It's probably the least safe part of Holland. And so I'm like, here's where I am. And he goes, okay, give me a few minutes. I don't know how he made the trip that fast, but he made the trip. And he looked at my car, did some things, and then he goes, okay, there you go. I don't know what he did. I assume that when I became a dad, they were going to give me the secrets. I don't know the secrets. Who's holding the secrets? He did some things, and then my car ran, and I thanked him, and then he went home, and I went back to the dorm, or to my little house there, and I remember laying in bed that night and saying, thank you, God. Thank you that somebody shows up. Like, what a gift that somebody, I just remember praying, thank you that I had somebody that would show up. Number 15. There is a story in Mark chapter 9. If you read it slowly, the story itself is a bit troubling. If you read the story slowly, the story is of a dad. And this dad comes to Jesus and he's got an issue. His son has been having these demonic attacks, essentially seizures. Let me read you the story. Verse 17. Teacher, he says, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth and he gnashes his teeth and he becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to help to drive out the spirit, but they could not. The man is a dad and he is desperate. And he's gone to Jesus' disciples. And Jesus' disciples, for whatever reason, well, we know later that it's because they don't pray. They try to do it with whatever. They don't pray. They don't pray. And so Jesus, if you know anything about, Jesus has had a bit of a day. Read Mark. Jesus has had a bit of a day and he's told his disciples for a while now, like, hey, listen, when you're going to do something, you should probably ask your father first. Talk to God. Don't just try things. Don't just wing it. Talk to God. Jesus has had a bit of a day. By the way, if you have kids and you've asked them a number of times, pick up your room and they don't, it'll explain Jesus' response. Jesus says to his disciples, you unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. Have you ever been in that spot? Listen, kid, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Now, verse 20. So they brought the boy to him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and he rolled around, foaming at the mouth. So he's mid like this attack, this seizure. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? That's the troubling piece for me. This boy's mid-attack, mid-convulsion, rigid, foaming at the mouth, rolling on the ground. And Jesus asks the boy, or the dad, a question. How long has he been like this? Like, wouldn't you expect that Jesus would first heal the kid, then maybe let's have a conversation, we'll take you out to lunch, but first, would you heal the son? The dad responds, from childhood, he answered, the spirit has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. I remember feeling this one, the word us there. I missed this before I was a parent, but the dad doesn't say take pity on him. He says take pity on us. Because if you're this dad, this evil spirit is tormenting you too, isn't it? If you've walked with a kid through a thing, this evil spirit is tormenting you too. The word pity there, take pity on us. I looked it up because I was curious. It's in Greek. It's a Greek word. The Greek word is splanknidzomai. Let me hear you say splanknidzomai. Yeah, good word. It comes from two Greek words. The first word is splank, which is the Greek for spleen or bowels. Splank, and then nidzomai, which means to turn. It's essentially, do you hear what he's asking here? Is Jesus says, how long has he been like this? And he says, take pity on us. Would your stomach turn with our stomach? Would you feel what we're feeling here? Why does Jesus ask a question first? Because what you discover about Jesus is always wanting to feel it with people. He's never in a hurry. He's never like, I'm running late for the meeting. He's always like, people are never interruptions. Like I said, I'm not always as good at this one as Jesus, for sure. Thought number 16. Lazarus, just a couple examples. Jesus' friend Lazarus dies, and he's greeted by Martha and Mary, Lazarus' sisters. They're grieving, and they're angry, and they're crying, and they're asking the question, where were you, Jesus? Where were you, Jesus? They got some questions. Jesus, even though Jesus knows he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead, he's at this point said it four times in the story. I'm going to raise him. This one does not end in death. Four times. Even though he knows how the story ends, Jesus in this moment weeps with them. Number 17. Jesus is on the way to heal a man whose daughter is dying. And as this man's desperate too, and as he's heading there, crowds are pressing up against him. And a woman who's been bleeding for 12 years, doctors could not help her. She's desperate, and she reaches out and she grabs Jesus' cloak, and he stops and he talks with her. She's not an interruption. Thought number 18. A blind man calls out to Jesus, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me, a sinner. Jesus stops and heals the man. Number 19, Jesus is being arrested. And Peter grabs a sword, short sword, cuts off a guy's ear. And Jesus is being arrested, but he still takes a moment and he heals the guy who's arresting him. And then lastly, number 20, one of my favorite stories in the life of Jesus, or lastly in this stuff about Jesus, but one of my favorite stories in the life of Jesus is he has this encounter with a Samaritan woman. Samaritans are the enemies. This story is so loaded. We did 6 weeks on this story alone a couple years ago. But there's a line in the story that I found really interesting as I was prepping this sermon. Let me read it for you. John 4, it says, now Jesus had to go through Samaria. So he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, here's the line, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. Now, what will unfold is one of the most beautiful stories in the entire Bible. Go home, read the story. It's one of the most beautiful stories of redemption, of love, of grace in the entire Bible. But the reason it happens is because Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down. If you keep reading, verse 8, we read, his disciples had gone into town to buy food. Apparently, they find, we can keep going. Jesus pays attention, slows down, and one of the most beautiful stories in the entire Bible unfolds because of it. That thought stuck with me for 5 full days in the middle of December. 5 full days, I remember thinking this question, how much am I missing because I struggle to slow down? How many divine encounters do I miss because I've got a mission, I got to get to the office, I got to get, like, how much do I miss? Number 21, right on time. Number 21, 3 weeks ago, a good friend of mine, Wally Harrison, is a pastor at Walker Harbor Church. Some of you know Wally. You love Wally too. But Wally said to me, you know what I'm trying to do, Tim? I'm trying in this next season of my life to live a 3-mile-per-hour life. To which I said, well, what is that? And he quoted this book. I'm going to butcher the name, but it's Kazuke Koyama, who wrote a book. I've not read this book, but he highly recommends it. And So I'll pass it along. It's called the 3 mile an hour God. The premise is 3 miles an hour is the average pace of walking. Jesus lived life one relationship at a time. Thought number 22. Mrs. Ward pulled me aside on the way to recess and said, you know, Tim, you know, and she said it with such love, by the way. I don't know how to convey that because it sounds mean, but she said, you know, Tim, you know what your problem is sometimes I think you have constipation of, or diarrhea of the mouth and constipation of the brain. I'm promising you there's nothing mean in that, but it's hard to hear that. 2 years after that, we gathered, my family and I gathered at, I believe it was, if my memory serves me right, it was Hudsonville Reformed Church. And we gathered because Mrs. Ward had, this was 2 years later, had left, I believe it was school, and she was driving and she hit a patch of something and her car went off the road and she was killed on impact. And I remember sitting at this church for the funeral service. My brother was in her class at the time. And I remember my face feeling tight, like that, like right before you're going to cry feeling, where it's like the cheeks feel heavy and tight. And like, I remember I had so many questions, but I didn't even know how to frame them. Like, I didn't even know what the framing was. This teacher had unlocked me. I remember thinking like, oh, this is actually kind of fragile. Life can be fragile. The Jesus brother James says that life, what is life? It's like a mist. It's here today and it's gone tomorrow. What is our life? It's like a mist. And if you have the opportunity to, like so many of us, we move so fast and we eat, but we don't taste. We're with, but we're not present with. We hug, but we don't hold. I mean, if you're one of the fortunate ones and you're sitting next to somebody that you love and that loves you, there is nothing more important on your radar today than whatever you're going to do with that person. And there's nothing more important on your radar this week. And what you find in the life of Jesus is this is the pace he lives his life at. I love how Rachel Reinink, planting pastor at Wayland, she often refers to it as Jesus moves at the speed of relationships. So a couple challenges. Try this one. If you're interested, the pausing every hour when it works, I get it. It's not going to, for me, is maybe 50% of the time I was able to do this, but and other times I was in conversation or in a meeting or something. But when you're able to pause, and if you're unable to do that, pause at the end of the day. Just take 5 minutes at the end of the day and just pull out. I use a phone because it's like I then have no excuse. Well, I don't have my journal on me. I use an app on my phone. If you, if you're more dedicated than I am, use pen and paper. I think that's even better. Keep an actual journal. Your great-grandkids will thank you for keeping an actual journal when they read what you wrote. But write it down. Like, what stood out? Who are you with? What stood out? What did they need out of you in that moment? What should you do later? I read an article about Mr. Rogers, and he would keep dedicated. You know, his secret sauce to knowing all this stuff about all these people was he would write dedicated notes about every person he met and kept them in a filing cabinet. And every time he would meet with somebody, he'd pull out his notes and say, oh, yeah, they've got this child got sick, they lost this person in their life. So he would review, like he was reviewing for a test. Brilliant. That's... I invite you to do that. The other thing that was really helpful for me was to read the stories of Jesus slowly. Honestly, it's a few minutes a day, but like just to read, pick a story and read it and ask the question, how did Jesus show up? I asked the other pastors and they gave some other suggestions. So let me give you a few others, just passing some things along. Move slower. Now, obviously, there's things sometimes where you have to move fast. Move fast in those times. But when you can, move slower. Drive the speed limit. Number two, drive the speed limit. It's also the law. throw that out there. Number three, come to a full stop. Also the law. Come on, other pastors. Come to a full stop at stop signs. Number four, show up 10 minutes early for an appointment without your phone. 10 minutes early. Number five, choose the farthest parking spot from an entrance. Number six, get in the longest checkout line at the grocery store. Like, just resist a culture of, like, oh, doing that. Number seven, keep your phone off until you've spent some time in silence and or reading. Number eight, this was my contribution, grow a vegetable or fruit. Just grow one this summer. Like, when it gets nice out, grow a vegetable or fruit. As a kid, we used to grow strawberries in our back lawn. We had this little plot, and we'd grow strawberries. And to this day, I love strawberries, but I've never tasted a better strawberry than the strawberries I grew as a kid. Grow your own fruit or vegetable. You can still buy others, but just grow your own fruit or vegetable. Number nine, this is also my contribution. Sit down to eat. If you get fast food, I'm not an anti-fast, well, I am, but for different reasons. But sit down to eat. If you're going to go to McDonald's, fine. Just sit down and eat it. I have, one of my best memories was eating chicken nuggets with my boy Abram when he was, Liza had left to a conference. He was like two, and I'm like, I'm going to ruin him at two. So we got chicken nuggets at McDonald's, and it was just a great time. So, like, if you're going to have to, just sit down and eat it, not in your car. And then number 10, put your phone to bed when you put your kids to bed or an hour before you go to bed. And then number 11, put your TV to bed at a decent hour. The CEO of Netflix was once asked, what is your biggest competition? You know what he said? Our biggest competition is sleep. Number 23. I think it's number 23. Yeah, number 23. Last one. I remember the moment. I remember it very vividly. It was Christmas night. It's last Christmas. I don't know what Christmas is like in your house, but in our house, it's like a flurry of activity in the morning. Like, there's all this presents, and it's a blast. And we head off, and we do the bunch of family stuff, and we come back to that. And there's, like, shrapnel of Christmas morning on the floor, right? We've got wrapping paper and Lego pieces, and they got to be sorted. And we've got, like shrapnel from crayons. It's all over the floor. And so I had made a cup of coffee. It was late, but I was like, I'm going to make coffee. It was decaf. I'm getting older. But I made coffee, and I was cleaning up the stuff. And I remember looking at my mantle, and off to the side of our fireplace, we've got these shelves, and there is a picture that hangs on the shelf. And the picture's been there four years. And I looked at the picture. On the picture, there is a quote. It's a quote from a poet named Mary Oliver. Let me read you what she said. And I just love the way it's written, too, because you actually have to slow down in reading this poem, like a good poem. Sometimes I need only to stand wherever I am to be blessed. And then that's a picture of Joanna. She's now four, but she's a baby there. And my boy Abram, this is before Lara was on the scene. And I was like cleaning up this house day of Christmas Day. And I'm reading this thing. And these words are perfect. Would you agree? The picture's perfect. But there's a deeper story behind this for me. So right before she left for the Appalachian Trail, Kate Yonkman, I'm getting to know where everyone's sitting, okay? Kate Yonkman, who was working on our team at the time, just an amazing, amazing human being. She, like, perfected slowing down her life to be present with people. And she bought me a book, and it was a book of Mary Oliver poems, because I had quoted this in a sermon 4 years ago or so. And so she bought me this little book, and I read through the book. The book means a lot to me because she slowed down enough to say, oh, this, I think you'll like this. Second thing was Christmas Eve 4 years ago, after our church service, Scott Gunderson, good friend of mine, goes here. Scott Gunderson, he sits this area, second service. Scott Gunderson comes with a piece, like a wrapped thing, and I open it up, and it's this. And then I get home, and I put it on the mantle where it sat. But it's been there for 4 years, and you know how it is when something's in your house, and it means a lot, but you just see it every day, and you forget about it. And so I'm thinking about my kids and thinking like, oh yeah, I wonder if Scott can Photoshop Lara in there. And like, I'm thinking all this stuff. And then I just have this realization that sometimes I only need only to stand wherever I am to be blessed. The lie is that our blessing lies when we lose the weight. The lie is our blessing lies when we get the promotion. The lie is that our blessing lies when we get the good grade. It's the myth that John Ortberg called Dallas Willard and tried to figure out. The lie is that joy lies somewhere else. And I had a moment where I realized I am blessed. And I did nothing to earn it, which is the definition of grace. And in those moments, all you can do is say, God, thank you that I have people who show up. Would you pray with me? Lord, I confess, and I imagine there's a group of us who can join in this confession, that I too often move too fast. Lord, I confess, we confess that you have blessed us, and more than likely, Lord, there's a billion ways that you are blessing us that we haven't even thought of saying thank you for. And so, Lord, we take a moment this morning and we simply bless you. We thank you. We thank you for every breath in our lungs, every person that matters to us. Lord, we thank you for every relationship that you've brought our way, even the ones that got hijacked by the enemy and played against us like pawns. Lord, those people, Lord, we thank you even for those. Lord, would they teach us something? And would you help us to find ways to bring peace? But Jesus, in this moment, we simply say thank you. Thank you. Help us to slow down so we can say thank you more often. We pray this in your name, and everybody said,
well, thanks once again for listening. We hope that this past series has given you some really practical steps as we've considered the practices of simplicity, Sabbath, silence, and slowing. We hope that as you try these out in your own time, that you'll find some new space for God. As always, you can find out more about South Harbor Church by visiting us on the web at southharbor.org, or you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at South Harbor Church. Our weekend services are held on Sundays at 9 and 11 a.m. We'd love to see you here. And so from all of us here at South Harbor Church, once again, we hope you have a great week.